Welcome to the Sunshine Economy, Trading with China. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. If I were to read the list of made-in-China items the Trump administration has threatened to levy a 25% tariff on, it would take me about 90 minutes. The list has 1,300 products on it. The first is thorium compounds. Now, thorium is a naturally occurring radioactive metal. Its compounds can be used for industrial ceramics, among other things. Last year, no thorium from China was imported into the United States. Appropriately enough, considering that this is the first listed item in the gathering storm over trade between the U.S. and China, thorium is named for the Norse god of thunder. The last item on America's $50 billion list is parts of seats made of bamboo. The U.S. imported about $1 million worth of this stuff from China last year. Lots of the items on the Trump administration's list are stuff America doesn't buy from China, like grenade launchers, communication satellites, and big helicopters, or stuff we buy very little of from China, like epinephrine, vinyl records, and nuclear reactors. But there are loads of other goods that find their way through South Florida, stuff like equipment for air conditioners, aircraft parts, and disk drives for computers that are on the list. And later this spring, they could face a 25% tax if the president follows through with his threat. We saw hundreds of these disk drives, for instance, in a warehouse west of the Turnpike in Miami, tucked just inside the urban development boundary. These are internal hard drives. These are not those kind of external hard drives that you use to back up your family photos with. These go inside personal computers.
Absolutely.
And we're looking at shelf after shelf after shelf of these internal hard drives.
We do 200 drives every 5 minutes.
That's Gary Goldfarb. He's the chief strategy officer for Interport Group of Companies. It's a freight forwarding and trade logistics company. We were in a corner of one of his two warehouses where they load operating systems in several languages on these hard drives to be installed inside computers elsewhere.
And these products go to Europe, these products go to Asia, these products go all over the place. But we load the operating system at the moment we get the order.
This is just one corner of the multi-billion dollar trade relationship South Florida has with the world. The Miami Customs District, which stretches from Key West to Palm Beach, did more than $7 billion worth of business with China last year. China is the second biggest trading partner with South Florida after Brazil. It made up about 7% of the global trading business last year with the region.
Really, this is the number one economic engine for this area.
Just a few miles east of Interport's warehouses is Miami International Airport. Lester Sola is the CEO. China is the fourth largest trading partner for the airport and the biggest outside of South America, so it has some stakes as the trade tensions build between the U.S. and China.
Well, Miami International Airport is number one in international cargo. So any time that there is a potential impact, a negative or a positive impact, really, it's something that we have to keep up our hands and your fingers on the pulse of that change.
So far this year, trade between MIA and China is up 20% compared to a year ago, according to the trade data firm World City. While the airport still sees about three times as much Chinese imports than American exports, exports headed to China from Miami almost doubled during the first 2 months of this year compared to the same time period last year. Now, China is the number one country for Port Miami. The port has invested heavily to attract its China business, dredging the shipping canal and installing massive gantry cranes to accommodate the big post-Panamax ships that are sailing through the expanded Panama Canal. We invited the port director for an interview, but he declined our invitation. So far this year, Port Miami's business with China is down 13% compared to last year. Now, the business of shipping goods to China is not immune to the trade tensions. After all, China announced its own $50 billion list of tariffs on American-made products. The Chinese list is 106 products long and is dominated by food and agriculture products like soybeans, beef, and orange juice, both frozen and fresh. It also includes American-made cars and airplanes.
So what we're finding out from the manufacturers we've spoken to is there is a lot of uncertainty among them.
Matthew Rocco is the president of the South Florida Manufacturers Association. We spoke to him via Skype.
How this will affect manufacturing, I think with any legislation, this is going to have some positive and negative effects. And we're already seeing kind of a ping pong effect, if you want to call that, among some of the manufacturers we've already spoken to. There's a lot of speculation going out there. And because of all that speculation, some manufacturers are already being impacted on the raw material side from the tariffs. even though, you know, nothing's been, you know, formally adopted, or, you know, the legislation's not in place yet.
And that's an important point. The tariffs threatened by America and China in the past 3 weeks have not been put in place. The U.S. taxes on the 1,300 categories of Chinese-made products won't go into effect until at least May. It's not clear from the Chinese when they may begin collecting taxes on their list of American-made goods. So there is time for negotiations, but after China announced its possible tariffs, President Trump directed American trade officials to identify another $100 billion worth of Chinese imports to tax. To reach such a number, that list would likely include cell phones and computer gear, two product categories that see a lot of trade through South Florida. They were the second and fourth most important valuable exports through Miami International Airport last year, and furniture is another important category for Port Miami, and furniture may be included in any second round of tariffs against Chinese goods. Ken Roberts is the CEO of trade data firm World City, based in Coral Gables.
Quite a bit of the trade that leaves South Florida is going to be Chinese products that enter the U.S. and for shipment out into Latin America. So, you know, one of the largest exports from South Florida is cell phones and computers and printers. We don't manufacture those things in the United States anymore. Those are largely Chinese imports coming to the U.S. and then being re-exported out. Can be any number of ways. It can be with a SIM card put in or some value added or, you know, so forth. But essentially, those are Chinese products going through Miami to Latin America.
And that illustrates South Florida's role in global trade. Stuck out on the peninsula, straddling two continents, what's at stake here as trade tensions tighten between the U.S. and China? Well, still to come, flying more cargo to and from China out of MIA.
Right now, really the growth that we've seen is in cargo, where originally we started with one airline, one flight a week. Now they have four flights. Now we have three different airlines flying into Miami International Airport with cargo.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. We're talking about trading with China today. When you arrive on the fifth floor of Terminal E of Miami International Airport and get off the elevators, you're greeted with a big full-color photo of an airplane. Not a surprise, right? You're at an airport. But it isn't an American Airlines passenger plane, even though American carries over half the passengers through MIA. It's not even one of the massive double-decker Airbus A380 passenger jets. It's a Cathay Pacific cargo plane. It runs a route from MIA to Hong Kong. You get through the security on the fifth floor and into the administrative offices, and above the reception desk, another big color photo of an airplane. That one also features a cargo plane, this one from China Airlines. It flies a route between Miami and Taipei, Taiwan, which China considers part of its territory. Now, there's lots of other photos around, aerial pictures showing all the runways and taxiways, and photos of a growing airport through the years. But these two photos may illustrate just how important the cargo business, and China specifically, is to the growth and economic impact of the airport on the entire region. Just days before the U.S. released its list of 1,300 made-in-China items that may face tariffs, the airport announced a sixth airline will be flying trade routes between Miami and Asia. Southern Air is owned by cargo carrier Atlas and will fly weekly between MIA and Hong Kong. We climbed up to the roof of the administration building on a sunny morning last week to get a view of the airfield and talk with Lester Sola. He was named CEO of the airport back in late February. Now, cargo has been a bright spot for MIA. Passenger traffic was down 1% in the last year, but cargo tonnage was up 3%.
So we're overlooking the tarmac and the area where all the airplanes park. But beyond our immediate view, we also see the cargo operations, which are on the western portion of Miami International Airport. So the majority of our traffic, our individuals that visit our airport, see really the eastern portion, which is the terminal and the concourses. But it's really just a couple of hundred yards away where the majority of the cargo operations take. And it's really a harmony between the cargo that's coming in the bellies of these passenger airplanes and how ultimately they get consolidated into the cargo-only portion of the operations, which is just on the portion side of the airport.
China has been an area of growth for Miami International Cargo. Is that at risk as these trade negotiations continue over the next couple of months and are at this heightened level?
It may. It's hard to tell at this point what, if any, impact this area or Miami International Airport will see. China is, in fact, a significant partner with regards to trade. I'll tell you, some of the airlines that originally were only flying once a week here are now having four times daily flights during the week.
And these are cargo flights, not passenger flights.
Well, that's something that we want to talk about as well, too. Right now, really the growth that we've seen is in cargo, where originally we started with one airline, one flight a week. Now they have four flights. Now we have three different airlines flying into Miami International Airport with cargo. One of the areas that we like to see is the development of basically passenger traffic with cargo in the bellies of those planes. But with regards to China and the involvement and the connection economically to this community, it's a very important one, and one that we want to continue to foster so that we can translate those into positive economic impact into this community.
Just recently, you welcomed a new cargo partner into Miami, flying routes between MIA and Hong Kong. So that route continues to see some investment on the part of private cargo haulers.
So what you're seeing is really the obvious opportunities that exist, and wherein originally there was none, and then there was one airline, one flight. Now you have the addition of another airline, Southern Air Cargo, and we see that same growth where there was taking place originally where there was no flights. Now there's multiple airlines flying cargo. We are really at the cusp of seeing the change, the next obvious change, which is one of the mixture of both passengers and cargo.
And so how are you approaching these tensions that have really been heightened over the last couple of weeks between Washington and Beijing?
Well, our focus really is on our mission of making sure that the airport continues to be viable, not just for passenger growth, but also for cargo and the connection to our economy in that regard. So our commitment is to continue to work with all countries, right, to make sure that depending on what products they need or what products we need, we're able to bring in or export those commodities, if you will. So if there is, in fact, tariffs, if ultimately there's a long pathway for those actually ultimately being implemented, we have to be able to adapt, right? So while the private sector will be able to adapt and make their changes, we have to be able to then be a partner with the private sector to be able to move those commodities in or out through Miami International Airport.
China broadly is about 5% of the cargo tonnage in and out of Miami International Airport. But it's also a place where there's been pretty significant growth. How do you see kind of Miami taking advantage of that growth in terms of the ripple effect that may have on the local community?
China has shown incredible growth with regards to it. And while we talk about percentages, it's always good to talk about in dollars. For us, it's really a $2 billion basically as far as commerce is concerned to this area. It's doubled within the last 6 years. So we continue to see that growth. And our issue is one where we have to make sure that people understand that the airport is in fact the number one economic engine for this area. And we have a grave responsibility, not just to move traffic and passengers, whether they're vacationing or taking care of commerce, but also oftentimes when people see airplanes flying, they think passengers, but really the belly of those planes really is what is the economic engine of moving commerce and moving commodities, trades. So we need to make sure that we continue to capitalize, and not just with China, but also as the gateway to the Americas, and having those perishables or electronics move freely between Miami and South and Central America.
What kind of scale of risk do the potential tariffs put on Chinese imports, and even more importantly, the potential of Chinese tariffs put on American exports into China? What does that spell for Miami and its China business?
It's hard to tell. I mean, it's something that we're monitoring very closely. We have to see if any of these tariffs ultimately do get placed. Right now, there is a time period that has to run its course. But for us, any time that there's a potential impact as with regards to the commodities or the products that are coming in or out of this airport is something that we have to track and monitor closely. Obviously, we have to work hand in hand with the private sector so that if there are, in fact, tariffs, that they can accommodate and move and shift their operations so that we can continue to be a partner in moving those goods or services.
As you're new to the director position, Director Sola, how do you see cargo growing under your leadership? Where do you see cargo going? What do you want to accomplish with the cargo piece of the business here at MIA?
Cargo is often very difficult to explain, but cargo is sometimes even more important than the passenger traffic. The amount of monies that are made by our surrounding companies that basically call Miami-Dade County home are very important to the prosperity of those private companies. So cargo is very important. We recognize that we have over 44 million people passing by this airport, and we have focused a lot of our attentions on making that passenger flow as convenient and happy as possible, so they want to continue to connect through Miami International Airport. But they go hand in hand. The amount of cargo that's coming through these airplanes really is the lifeblood of our economic growth.
The CEO of Miami International Airport, Lester Sola. Now, in February, $322 million worth of goods took off from the airport destined for China. That was 11% of the exports leaving the airfield for international markets. Still to come, South Florida and the global supply chain caught between rising trade tensions.
This new regulation will touch the majority of our customers.
This is the Sunshine Economy, Trading with China. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. When I walked into Gary Goldfarb's office at the company he helps run and sat down across from his desk, he pointed to a small bookshelf behind me. It held small square boxes, prototypes of a powder fire extinguisher. They're designed for the maritime industry to be thrown into a fire where they're supposed to explode with dry chemicals and put it out. So you've got a few here. Can I pull one out?
Absolutely.
All right, let me grab one. So it's a cardboard box. That's, maybe 7 inches square. We'll open it up here. This is a product you don't manufacture. You're involved with the importing, exporting of it?
Our involvement would be more to determine if it's exportable, importable into the United States, what the duty rates would be, what the market would be, and then we help the customers develop their own markets.
Let's hold that box
down.
More
of a service organization than anything else.
All right, so it's kind of a cube, a red cube that's kind of shrink-wrapped. Maybe, 4-5 inches square for this cube. And it is a smart nano extinguisher. And on the side here, I can see that it is manufactured in China. How does this intersect your business? And is this a product that is subject to the trade tensions?
Absolutely. This is, normally we would look at this product and determine the duty rate. But when the new list came out of the products that are going to be sanctioned 45 days from now, this is smack on the list. It's right in the middle of the list. Most of our customers' imports are products that are on the list.
What Goldfarb's company does is manage the receiving and shipping of freight of hundreds of products. In Miami, it has two warehouses in western Dade County bordering the urban development boundary. Sure enough, on the list of China imports into the U.S. that may be slapped with a 25% tariff are fire extinguishers. Harmonized Trade Schedule Item Number 8424-1000. America imported $5.5 million worth of them from China last year. One out of every 24 foreign-made fire extinguishers came from China. Mexico was the much bigger importer. The example of this new fire extinguishing product, as it sits on your shelf here in your office as you're looking at it, subject potentially to these new tariffs because it is a made-in-China product that wants entry into the United States marketplace.
This new regulation will touch the majority of our customers, and now we're going through all of their product lists to identify which products will have to go into foreign trade zone and which products can be imported directly.
What have you been able to tell this company that is involved with this new type of fire extinguisher, this dry powdered fire extinguisher?
They're going to have a 25% increase in their duty rate. Plain as that. And the import will be slower because it's since one of the products on the list, customs is going to want to take a longer look. So it's their business is going to be impacted.
Presumably, if they still decide to go through this product into the United States, some of these may be shipped through Miami, either Port Miami, Miami International, Port Everglades, any of the entry points here to become imports from China into the United States. Does it have an impact?
Definitely. These products will actually come to Miami. They've already decided they're going to go ahead anyway. These products are destined more for the maritime industry, where you have flash fires and you're not necessarily present when the fire is there, then the item just explodes by itself. But they will come through Port Miami. Port Miami most probably will see, when Port Everglades, most probably will see a slight decrease in products coming through. One of our biggest products is air conditioning. We handle air conditioners for four of the seven major manufacturers, and they are all on the list. So, and all of them manufacture in China. So we're now working with them a strategy to be able to minimize the duties, the countervailing duties, when the products actually have to clear in the United States. Thankfully, Miami is a transshipment port. So merchandise comes here normally to leave to other countries. In that case, there is no duty. But in the case that they have to deliver to a local distributor who then will export, then they'll have to pay that duty, which could be a problem.
That's an important point. South Florida warehouses take possession of a lot of stuff from China that is not necessarily destined for the U.S. market. A lot of it comes in and winds up headed to South America and the Caribbean. While South Florida has benefited from that trade, Interport's Chief Strategy Officer Gary Goldfarb says the region should not take that position for granted.
China setting up ports, port operations in many other countries in the region and in many islands throughout the Caribbean, which most probably indicates that if the United States makes it too difficult for their products to come in, they may go direct. And when they go direct, they skip Miami, they skip us.
China for years has made significant infrastructure investments and other investments and partnerships in Latin America. What is this potential of a port competition in the Caribbean basin pose if these trade talks don't result in some kind of mutually agreeable relationship between the U.S. and China?
Well, if you look at the port concept that the Chinese are using now is very interesting. They are building at their expense airports and ports in many Caribbean islands with the hope of being able to land there with a larger ship and then from there distribute to the other Caribbean islands, skirting the United States and any regulation or any control the United States would want to exert on its goods. It's Monroe Doctrine all over again. Or the end market could potentially be the United States, because now we don't have to only watch China. We have to watch all these other sources, all these other origins that may have Chinese products. So all of a sudden, instead of watching one big chunk, we're watching a whole bunch of little vessels coming here with merchandise that may or may not have China origin in them, or components that may have China origin in them. It becomes very difficult to police.
Is this leverage that China has been building, this capacity that China has been building in the Caribbean basin, is it at a place that it can really threaten the trade business and importance of South Florida to global trade and to both domestic exports out into the world as well as international imports in?
This is going to be a messy fight. And it's a messy fight for them to regard us with the same respect they would like to be regarded with.
This is the Chinese you're referring to.
So in a fight, there's always scrimmages and there's war fights and wars. You know, as long as you win the final war, you're fine. It's going to be very complicated. It's going to be very messy because Miami plays both sides. Miami plays as an import house for Chinese products, as an export house for Chinese and other products to the region, and then they're trying to go to the region direct. So it's going to be very complicated and very messy, but Miami has always thrived. I've been here from when we used to port was where the American Airlines Arena is today, and we used to load ships by hand. Today is a completely different animal, and we didn't thrive simply because it was easy. We thrived because it was difficult, and the Miami community is very gritty. We will thrive in this environment, and at some point in time, I believe that China and the United States will end up being closer friends than what they are now, because they will settle their differences and the distrust. There's a tremendous amount of distrust in between the two nations. So when we finally, air our differences, I think we're going to gain trust from each other.
Is this the beginnings of a trade war in your estimation, in your experience?
No, I don't think so. I really, really don't think so. I think 45 days out, we'll have duties imposed. And I think 90 days out, they'll be canceling the duties or amending the duties or adjusting the duties or creating a waiver. But you have to understand that for many, many years, China was given general preference under the general systems of preference. Under that preference, China paid no duty, whereas Europe and all our other friends, real allies, paid duties. So over time, China got a tremendous advantage from us.
And there was a policy there to encourage the Chinese economy, to try to plant the seeds of global trade within China and help that domestic economy out. I mean, that was part of the foreign policy dating back to Richard Nixon flying into Beijing.
That was the goal. The goal was to create China as a consumer nation so that we could do business with China. However, we didn't realize that we had to curtail China from eventually taking all of our manufacturing capabilities away. And when we lose our manufacturing capabilities, at some point in time, we become subjects to them. We become basically supported by them because we're not manufacturing anything. We're not creating anything. We're not creating any value. So we do have to regain some of that stature. We have to recover some of our manufacturing capability and trade as equals.
One feature that may help shield the South Florida trade industry a bit from the trade slowdown with China, should one come, is right inside the warehouse, just a few dozen feet from Gary Goldfarb's office at Interport, a foreign trade zone. As we stepped over the threshold, that's only 10 feet behind us, we stepped into a foreign trade zone, is that right?
Correct.
And so that means if there's any products in here that are on the list of products from China that the United States wants to put a 25% tax on, they're here tax-free in this space for now.
If you were merchandise, you would need a passport to get back into my office, basically. Because the merchandise here we haven't determined yet whether it's going to be consumed in the country, whether it's going to go out of the country, or it may even get destroyed. And that's what foreign trade zones are for. It gives you that Switzerland environment where you don't have to really determine what you're going to do yet. So you will see this is foreign trade zone and this is domestic. The only difference is a yellow line.
So the stuff to our right is in the FTZ.
Correct.
The stuff to the left has been domesticated.
Right. Or came domestic already, or maybe made in the United States. Some things are made in the United States.
There are more than 100 sites like this scattered throughout the half dozen approved foreign trade zones in South Florida. These zones allow goods imported into the U.S. to sit and not pay taxes until it's determined where the stuff is going. And there's a lot of stuff in Interport's warehouses. Pallet after pallet of smart TVs here, 32 inches, 49 inches.
Drywall over there.
Walking between pallets of light bulbs.
Yeah, Black
right
Rhino,
there.
Hard alloy. Yeah, fancy rims for your car, your truck.
Yard rakes.
And I saw back there some lawn chairs and desks.
Yeah.
You've got multi-floor thin-set mortar.
Blenders here.
Ceiling tiles. I saw some auto struts.
We've got utility fences, what I would call chicken wire.
Hot chocolate shoes.
Yeah, energy drink, creamy strawberry.
Quick-set concrete here.
Vacuum cleaners.
Pouring tubes for concrete.
Here's, exterior doors.
Electronic golf carts back there that were wrapped up, ready to be delivered.
Some stuff made in America, some made in China, some staying in the U.S., some shipped here only to be sent off to another foreign port, all part of the trade industry here in South Florida. Still to come, what's at stake in the trade tensions between the U.S. and China for South Florida manufacturers?
If our companies cannot do business anymore by buying it overseas in China, they've got to turn to the U.S. markets. Do the U.S. markets have the capacity to fulfill these orders?
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy, Trading with China. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening to WLRN. In February, almost 93,000 South Floridians made their living in the manufacturing industry. That's about one out of every 30 jobs. But in the past year, one out of every seven new jobs created in the region was added at a manufacturer. Now, these are not factories.
It's not your typical, you know, what people think of is your machine shop, people, you know, sweatshop, producing a product. I mean, it touches marine, aviation.
Matthew Rocco is the president of the South Florida Manufacturers Association. We spoke with him via Skype.
You know, it touches four or five different industries. As you're seeing, the healthcare, pharmaceutical, medical device equipment, industrial controls, motor controls. You've got material handling. You've got the AC.
Trade being a two-way transaction, the impact of South Florida manufacturers specifically depends upon what side of the deal they're on. If they're selling products into China, those products may face Chinese taxes, which could hurt demand in China, forcing those companies to look for new markets. If the regional companies import stuff from China and use it in their manufacturing work, they could face a 25% increase in their cost of business if the American tariffs on Chinese products takes effect. This side of the deal probably is the bigger threat, as local manufacturers already have some early experience dealing with the knock-on effects of the tariffs the U.S. put on steel and aluminum from China and Japan. Just think about metal roofs or the aluminum used in hurricane windows.
So let's take a look at a structural steel manufacturer. We spoke to this particular company, we've asked them. I said, you know, what's affecting you importing the steel originally from China? They said they don't import any steel from China. I said, oh, great. So, you know, conversation done. They said, no. However, although we don't import anything, we're already realizing sharp increases from the U.S. steel mills. So they're a very large consumer, as I mentioned, of structural steel. They've seen what they're telling us, a 51% price increase from the U.S. steel mills. And, you know, so what do you glean from that? Are the U.S. steel mills, you know, taking full advantage of kind of the uncertainty out there already? I think one could understandably correlate that. I mean, if this company is already seeing it, are the U.S. mills already getting out ahead of the curve here? So, you know, I thought that was striking to us at least.
Rocco says the South Florida manufacturers his trade group have spoken to are dealing with the uncertainty and speculation around the raw materials they've traditionally sourced from China.
It's going to affect a lot of the commodities. I mean, how about a supplement manufacturer? I think it could be another good example.
Like a vitamin supplement manufacturer,
yeah,
that kind of thing?
That kind of thing, exactly. You know, they use, there's some aluminum there's in the packaging they have, right? There's some aluminum and other commodities involved in that. But, for example, they're already getting out on the front of this and avoiding ways to look at tariffs. These companies are looking at alternative supply chain solutions, maybe some product changes, or maybe supply chain partners in other countries to minimize the impact of these tariffs. It's going to be an interesting challenge because, you know, what happens? The costs are passed down to the consumers. There's another manufacturer that we have. They're in heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. Their biggest concern is these imports. They're already planting seeds with their customers for potential increase. So it's interesting because you've got companies doing all sorts of things without a final version of what it's going to be. And then there's a lot of companies that we spoke to in various industries that they don't even want to touch this right now. They don't have the time. They don't have the energy. They're like, we don't even know what it's going to be. They can't even take a position on it. So it's some of them are just kind of sitting on the sidelines.
Meantime, business continues, and for those manufacturers who depend on materials from China, they may be left looking for what they need to operate their businesses from other suppliers. To some degree, this is a goal of the Trump administration's tough stance on trade with China, to revitalize American manufacturing by raising the price of cheap imported raw materials like aluminum, steel, plastics, chemicals, machinery parts, and other items. But can South Florida manufacturers find what they need in America?
You know, one effect, although it's positive in that regard, but the lead times are going up and inventory is becoming much more expensive. And I guess it makes me wonder, you know, this gets to a supply and demand issue. So if our companies cannot do business anymore by buying it overseas in China, they've got to turn to the U.S. markets. Do the U.S. markets have the capacity, the supply and demand issue Do they have the capacity to fulfill these orders? Is it going to take longer? Is that going to have an effect?
Miami-Dade is home to the most manufacturing jobs of any county in Florida. Broward and Palm Beach counties are 5th and 8th, respectively, among Florida counties. Now, collectively, they paid their workers more than $1 billion in combined wages in the third quarter of 2017, the latest date information is available for. That $1 billion is more than 20% of all the industry wages paid by manufacturers throughout the entire state. So how will Matthew Rocco of the South Florida Manufacturers Association determine the impact of the possible tariffs in the months ahead?
Is it affecting your supply chain? Is it affecting your lead time? You know, what's the change in that aspect? Is there a supply and demand issue? What strategies are you taking place? Are you looking at different supply chains in other countries that may not be affected? Are you losing jobs because of this? What has it done, you know, to the cost of goods sold? How's it affecting your bottom line? I mean, operationally looking at, you know, what is it doing to your business?
Still to come, addressing the rising trade tensions and the opportunity and risk for South Florida.
Most Americans would agree that we don't want our intellectual property to be stolen. The problem is we've instead of using a surgeon, we're sort of using a butcher to try to solve the problem.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy, Trading with China. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening and supporting WLRN. President Trump won the election in 2016 in part with his tough talk on trade. One of his first acts after his inauguration was canceling America's participation in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That was a trade deal originally with a dozen countries that included Australia, Chile, and Peru, and the United States, and others. His trade representative has gone on and held 7 rounds of talks with Mexico and Canada, renegotiating the North American Free Trade Agreement. And this year began with new American tariffs on foreign-made solar panels and washing machines. Then in March, foreign steel and aluminum was added, even though exemptions were eventually added for metal coming from Canada, Mexico, the European Union, South Korea, and Brazil. China put tariffs on American fruit, wine, and pork in retaliation for the American taxes on Chinese-made steel and aluminum. Now, the list of goods that could face taxes here and in China continues growing as the Trump administration and the Chinese government trade tariff threats. Ken Roberts has watched many trade disputes in the past and notes this one has been building for years over America's argument that China does not respect U.S. intellectual property rights. Roberts runs the trade data firm World City. We spoke with him in his Coral Gables office.
There's disagreements about the best path forward to protect U.S. intellectual property, essentially. The impact on South Florida is not small because Port Miami's number one trade partner with about 17% of all its trade is China. MIA's number four trade partner is China with about 4.6% of all its trade. We bring in a lot of imports, both through the airport and the seaport. The airport in particular has been working very hard for a number of years to attract all cargo airliners to come into MIA to bring some of that trade here that can then often go on to Latin America.
How did this challenge of intellectual property with China, which is decades old, grow into this tariff for tariff, tit for tat now that we're seeing between Washington and Beijing, with Miami caught in it, as well as all international trade ports in the United States caught in the middle?
I think most people would agree that, most Americans would agree that we don't want our intellectual property to be stolen. The problem is we've instead of using a surgeon, we're sort of using a butcher to try to solve the problem with this big potential trade war with these tariffs going back and forth. Our exports to China have been growing faster relative to imports for the last several years. They're still very small relative to those imports, but they've been growing faster. There's a number of companies doing a lot of exporting to China. The trick is to get off this this drumbeat of tariffs and tariffs and tariffs and get back to negotiating and try to move the needle. Let's see if this sort of this hard approach works. It might work, but it certainly is unsettling to many.
You've got your hands on international trade data
for years. Is this, in your estimation, is this a trade war? Is this the first battle in what could become a trade war between these two largest economies in the world?
I don't think it will become a trade war, because I think by now Xi Jinping probably has taken Trump's measure a little bit, and he understands that he often throws out a very big, brash, bold statement, and then he dials back.
Xi is the president of China.
China. So I think when you're doing business across culture, you have to understand the language, and sometimes it's not just the actual words, but how people use those words. Trump tends to be hyperbolic. He tends to speak in absolutes. I think the Chinese probably understand that now, and I think this thing will dial back pretty quickly. The types of tariffs Trump is suggesting, he suggested across 1,300 different categories. That is a whole lot of categories, and they're leaving out cell phones, and they're leaving out furniture, and they're leaving out clothing. There's not as much clothing as there used to be, but cell phones and furniture alone are just an enormous amount of that trade, and you just can't leave them out of tariffs that are supposed to be worth $50 to $60 billion. You can't do it. It's almost everything else.
So as you look through that list, as you've seen those list of categories, how exposed is Miami to this tiff right now?
So Miami on the, particularly Port Miami on the import side, in terms of the value of its imports from China, there's no single import that's worth more than 5% of the total. So it'll be a very broad brush that will affect Port Miami. Somewhat different with MIA. MIA's trade is sort of interesting. About 65% of the value of the exports that went to China last year from MIA was gold. And about 64% of the imports from China were cell phones and related equipment. So those are the two big things that go back and forth. But when you look at the weight from MIA, for example, if you look at weight, then you see things pop up like shrimp and other crustaceans, lobster and so forth, that are going from MIA to China. So there's a lot of things that could be affected. And these tariffs, as suggested at 25%, are pretty steep. Many of the things we buy as consumers, if you tell me tomorrow that everything's going to be 25% more expensive, that's a pretty big number. So
is that what we're ultimately talking about here, Ken, is a tax on the consumer should any of these tariffs, some of them or all of them, get put into place either by Washington or by Beijing?
Tariffs are a tax on consumers. That's essentially what they are. They make things more expensive. That's who ends up paying for them. But again, the reason I'm optimistic, if you looked at the steel and aluminum tariffs that he proposed, he dialed that back very quickly, and suddenly it's down to China and Japan. Japan is seeking to be carved out. China accounted for just a few points of all the steel and aluminum imports into the United States to begin with. It was mainly Canada, Brazil, Germany, Mexico, our friends, South Korea.
A bellicose proposal then becomes much more surgical. The butcher becomes much more surgical. To the business of Miami trade, the Miami Customs District, which encompasses Port Miami, Everglades, Palm Beach, and the airports, is one of the unique places in the United States where the trade business enjoys a surplus. In other words, we do more business outbound than we do inbound. So how does the industry here in Miami look at this? How does it try to continue to operate and continue to grow with this ramp up of 45 days after the original announcement to whether or not the tariffs actually get put into place?
And that's the other problem, that as I speak to people around the community, around the country, it's the uncertainty that makes things so difficult, because supply chains aren't 30 to 45 days. They tend to be longer. And so it just makes people stop and think, well, I don't know what to do. Heard the story of a company that was importing some steel from Japan, as it turns out, not China, from Japan. And the tariffs went into effect 18 minutes before they were able to take possession of that steel, and it cost them $2 million. So these things can have impacts, and they can be difficult.
Does the risk of the trade with China, does that become a headwind for the trade and logistical industry here in South Florida, which has been growing like gangbusters? Right. Real estate-wise, industrial space is at a premium.
Yeah. I think that China's important. Between the airport and seaport, last year was about $7 billion. But what's also part of that equation is with China comes Vietnam. With China comes Taiwan. With China comes other Asian partners. So it's opening the the seaport just did its massive dredging, bought the new gantry cranes, wants the bigger ships. Those ships are going to come from Asia. That's where they're coming from. So it's really important. MIA has made enormous effort to bring those planes from Asia, from China, to MIA. And all that gets jeopardized if this becomes a trade war, which I don't expect, but it's, you know, it certainly adds uncertainty into the environment. I wrote a somewhat whimsical column for Forbes that said, if you want to get rid of the trade deficit, just nobody buys a computer or a cell phone for a year in this country. And it goes away. You got your 100, not in the deficit, but you get your $100 billion right there. Problem is, look at the impact down the line. And that's ultimately the effect of tariffs. If you say, we're gonna reduce that deficit by $100 billion, it's not affecting just China. It affects everything along the way. It affects retail outlets. It affects consumers who don't have the latest tools. It affects the trucking firms. It affects the rail lines. It affects the shipping lines. It affects the freight forwarders. It affects international bankers. It affects everybody along that supply chain gets affected by that loss of business.
And ultimately could affect federal, state, and local governments on the part of taxes.
Correct. And if you do get into a real trade war where China is our number one market for about ranked one or two market for about half of the U.S.'s leading exports. So we think we don't trade that much with China. We have this enormous imbalance, but they're number two for cars behind Canada. They're number one for aircraft, obviously number one for soybeans, very high up for computer chips, all sorts of things we send to China. They are a growing export market. They rank number three behind Canada and Mexico.
What's the language you're listening for, or some of the signals you're watching for, that those of us who aren't so steeped in trade and kind of international trade diplomacy and language could miss?
To me, what is fascinating to watch is the dance between Trump and Xi Jinping, the two presidents, and to see how they figure each other out, because they're both strong leaders, strong-willed. As we know, Xi has taken some positions that take them back to the rule of the era of Mao, where he can be president forever. A little frightening, and we should be frightened. The question is, how close to that ledge do you want to go before you pull back, and who's going to blink? Who's willing to take that chance? And you know, there is risk if neither side is willing to back down. But I think the Chinese understand this is Trump posturing, and he's just looking for a bargaining chip. And the question is, what will the Chinese give up, and what will the U.S. give up? You know, where is that point that they sort of both say, okay, this is good enough for now. We'll settle our other disagreements tomorrow.
Ken Roberts with the trade data firm World City, based in Coral Gables. Don't forget you can follow us worldwide on Twitter at WLRN. You can also look for a podcast of this program by searching Sunshine Economy on iTunes. Pilar Ribe is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.